And now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords with Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena, and happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. Not a big White Day celebrator, huh?
Happy yeah. White Day. completely forgot.
It does kind of go over our heads, but John wants to celebrate it, so we are going to in our second hour. We have a whole theme topic of discussion. Yeah. Yes, yes.
It's funny because I keep updating people on what day it is and other days of the week, but today is White Day and I forget that. I mean, gosh.
I know, right? Too much of a good thing. Yeah. But anyway, just a reminder to all of our listeners to go out there and buy candies. I don't remember. John will clarify.
Right. I'm not good with gifts and so... Uh-huh. My other half won't be very happy.
I was about to say. It's still very early in the morning.
I know.
Surely you can go out there.
Yeah, it's good that I realized this early in the morning, I have a bit of time. Yeah.
What good is good morning soul if we can't remind you of things to do throughout the day? Now, the other thing that we're good at is probably getting you caught up with the daily headlines. So let's go there. Seoul has doubled the space budget, trying to, of course, stay atop this global space race. Our first keyword of the day.
Space development.
So President Yoon has pledged to boost Korea's space development budget to more than 1.5 trillion won by 2027. He was speaking during an event to launch a new space industry cluster down in Sacheon. Can you run us through the proposed plan?
Right, so the ceremony itself was held at Korea Aerospace Industries in Sacheon to launch a so-called Space Tech Triangle. Now, it will comprise Daejeon and the South Gyeongsang and South Cholla regions. Now, this cluster aims to establish a private-led space industry development system with South Gyeongsang specializing in satellites, South Cholla in launch vehicles, and Daejeon in research and talent development. Now, Yoon wants to expand related investments to make South Korea one of the world's top five space powers by the year 2045. And he vowed to attract 100 trillion won in private investments by that year and create more than 250,000 quality jobs. And he said the cluster is expected to bring together 1,000 space companies. And he added that at least 10 of them will grow into what he called world-class space companies. Now, Yoon promised to increase Korea's space market share, currently standing at 1%, to over 10% by 2045. Looking ahead, Yoon envisions Korea making significant strides in space exploration, including landing a spacecraft on the moon by 2032 and planting the national flag on Mars by 2045. And he expressed hope that the newly established space industry cluster would play a leading role in these endeavors. Now, to facilitate these ambitious goals, the president promised that the government would build essential infrastructure that might be challenging for private companies to undertake on their own. The government plans to speed up preliminary feasibility study for a South Cholla space launch vehicle industrial complex and complete the creation of a South Gyeongsang aerospace industrial complex within the year. Now, it will also establish a space technology innovation training center in Daejeon at the end of 2028. So each of these regions in the so-called triad of this place cluster have their own distinctive roles. Of course, Daejeon being home to universities like KAIST, for example, that specializes in, you know, robotics engineering and space, will of course nurture the related talents and the other regions in the related technologies.
So, I like how you discuss KAIST and you just kind of leave out AI. Turn our focus to space.
Right. Yeah. So a host of other fields and sectors is what's going to be covered. So it's going to be a big cluster. So we'll have to keep our eyes on what developments are made and what kind of companies will kind of prop up because of this as well.
Absolutely. It seems space is an important endeavor, not just in just future technology and exploring the space, but it's about military capability and surveillance and things like that, right? It's about security issues too. So that's why it seems a global space race is much, much more heated today and nobody can be really left behind, especially if you're ahead. All right, let's move on to our second keyword of the day.
Medical debate.
So the government and the medical community are still disagreeing about increasing the number of medical students. It's the same issue at hand. This was evident in a discussion held between medical professors and government officials. Now, it seems that professors who still had to show up to work, right, because it's the training doctors who are striking, they're the one feeling the pressure. They're the one feeling the vacuum in the front lines, and they want to sit down and negotiate to no avail, frankly. What did they have to say?
Yeah, so these professors are kind of trying to act like a mediator, if you will, between these tensions between the government and doctors, the trainee doctors who are on strike. And but they're kind of in a bit of a difficult situation at the moment because both sides are still very adamant. So it's very tough for them to try and find some middle ground, or trying to get them to find some middle ground, rather. Now, while the government wants to add more medical students quickly, professors suggest slowing down the expansion plan and mention that raising the fees for medical services could be part of the solution. Of course, that will face some possible backlash from the public and patients. Now, Professor Kim Sung-gun, for example, from Catholic University, spoke about the need for a different approach. He said doctors believe that fixing medical fees, easing legal pressures, recruiting more staff, and giving more support to healthcare in less served areas are critical steps before increasing the number of medical students. So he's basically saying that maybe the order of the plan is a bit should be revamped a little bit in order to ease these tensions. Professor Hong Yun Cha from Seoul National University looked into the future need for doctors, assuming an increase of 1,000 medical students per year. His findings suggest that while there might be a shortage by 2035, by 2050, this could either ease or lead to too many doctors. So now he advised that any increase in medical students should focus on areas outside big cities like Seoul, where more doctors are needed. And he also mentioned the possibility of adjusting the numbers in the future to avoid having an oversupply of doctors, if you will. Now, he also emphasized the need for big reforms in how healthcare services are paid for and provided. Now, meanwhile, Pang Min-soo, the deputy health minister, reiterated the government's plan to boost the number of healthcare workers and improve healthcare in rural areas, among other reforms. He mentioned that Korea has the highest number of medical treatments per doctor among OECD nations, and that the growth rate of medical school quotas in Korea is lower than in other countries, making an increase in quotas necessary. He also highlighted the issue of an aging population of doctors and the importance of preparing for doctors retiring from essential healthcare sectors. Now, both sides do agree on some parts of the government's healthcare reform plans, but say that more improvements like medical fees are needed. Now, the Korean Academy of Science and Technology, which hosted this meeting, its vice president, Han Ichar, mentioned the need for a new system of discussion that can gather insights and reach agreements within the medical community. Meanwhile, universities are struggling to deal with the mass leave of absence taken by medical students as well. So on top of the trainee doctors going on strike, medical students are actually skipping class, if you will. Now, at Hanlim University College of Medicine, for instance, students boycotting classes already meet the criteria for basically failing the semester, and the university is looking for ways to kind of help them. There are calls within universities to approve leaves of absence to avoid mass failures by students, but the education ministry insists that collective leave does not qualify as a valid reason for taking a leave. Now, this problem isn't just at Hanlim University. Medical students across the country are either applying for leave or boycotting classes. Now, typically, if students miss a significant portion of classes, they fail, and failing even one subject means they have to retake the whole semester without a tuition refund. Of course, Korean universities, it was a bit different from when I went to college for a year in the UK. There's a lot of emphasis on attendance of class rather than how well you do in exams or in assignments, for example. So now, despite the risk of failing, though, medical students' protest against the increase in admissions seems to be getting stronger as well. So it seems like they're not very fazed about the fact that they might be failing the semester and they might have to retake it. They're more they're trying to voice their protest and opposition to the plan more strongly.
It's ironic because this is over a hike of student admissions quota and hopes of, you know, training more doctors. But if we fail a massive amount of students, there's a potential delay in the more immediate run. Wouldn't you agree?
Right, exactly. So, yeah, in the short term anyway, it is a bit of a risk. But, yeah, I mean, the professors try to trying to get the two sides to sit down for talks, but as you can see, they're pretty adamant in their respective stances.
All right, tensions continue there. Let's move on to our third keyword of the day.
Summit for Democracy.
So U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken will be visiting Korea on Sunday to attend a session of the third Summit for Democracy. It is the first to be hosted outside of the United States. What can we expect?
Right. So it is expected that he will arrive through Ulsan Air Base and attend the summit on Monday. This visit will be the first in over 4 months. Now, he's also expected to have bilateral talks with Foreign Minister Cho Tae-yo. Now, this will be their second one-on-one meeting and comes only weeks, actually, since their last encounter. Now, the Summit for Democracy was first hosted by President Joe Biden in 2021 to address challenges to democracy. This year, Korea is the sole host of the third meeting, marking the first time a country other than the US has hosted the event alone. Now, the ministerial sessions will be held on the first day, which is Monday, followed by panel discussions involving civic groups the next day. The leader session will take place virtually on the last day. Now, during the summit, for the first time, there will be a discussion on the misuse of commercial spyware, which the Biden administration considers a priority. This follows the U.S. Treasury Department's recent actions against individuals and organizations involved in spyware. The summit will also likely discuss human rights issues in North Korea. Now, ahead of the summit, the White House National Security Council highlighted Korea as a leading democracy fighting alongside the United States and said it was meaningful that the country is hosting this year's Summit for Democracy.
All right, with that, we move on to our fourth keyword of the day.
TV license.
So Korea is making significant changes to its broadcast regulations, loosening it up a little bit, including ending relicense requirements for IPTV, cable, and satellite broadcast to give local broadcasters a little bit of wiggle room. Tell us the details.
Right, so broadcasters won't need to get their licenses renewed every few years, which was the case before. Also, TV channels like terrestrial and general programming will have their licenses last for 7 years instead of five. The government decided on these changes to make things easier for broadcasters and to encourage more companies to actually join the market. Now, instead of needing permission to start broadcasting, companies will just have to let the government know they're starting, which simplifies the process. Now, for TV and news channels that currently have to get their licenses renewed, the government will keep this requirement, but will allow the licenses to last for 2 more years than before. Now, the government also wants to make it easier for big companies and private companies to own more of broadcasting companies by changing the rules that currently limit how much they can own. Now, this is the first change of its kind in 16 years. They're also even looking at allowing foreign companies and newspapers more freedom in owning parts of Korean broadcasters, which they hope will help the broadcasting industry grow. Other changes include removing limits on how many subscribers a single broadcaster can have and getting rid of rules that say broadcasters have to show a certain number of channels or types of programs. There will also be fewer restrictions on ads, including allowing more advertising time during programs. The government plans to give also tax breaks to people making dramas and movies, offering up to 30% off taxes based on production costs. This will be to help producers fund their projects without having to sell their rights to overseas companies. And they also want to support Korean online streaming services going global by increasing the number of dedicated channels on smart TVs. By 2026, so 2 years' time, the government aims to train 10,000 new professionals in the media and content sectors as well. It is also setting up a system to fight against illegal content distribution. Prime Minister Han Duck-soo highlighted that these plans were made with input from experts and government departments. We'll have to see if there's any backlash from local broadcasters. There might be some. If you remember, I don't know if our listeners are aware, but many years ago, when there was this whole issue of a media merger, if you will, where newspapers started to launch their own TV broadcast, there was a lot of backlash as well from local broadcasters. So this is kind of a little bit of a reminiscent of that in terms of the plan, but we'll have to see what kind of reactions come out of this.
All right, let's move on to our final keyword. Now, when it comes to mobile service providers in Seoul, there is a big three. Now, if the competition becomes more competitive and consumers have more leeway to go from one to another, could it be a good thing? Our final keyword.
Hate to switch.
So starting tomorrow, when switching mobile phone carriers, customers can now receive up to 500,000 won in additional support funds on top of the usual support money and extra subsidies received. So for consumers, this might be a good thing. Tell us more.
Yeah, for consumers, it might be a good thing because, of course, it means more discounts for them. Now, the Korea Communications Commission made this decision during a meeting to encourage more competition between carriers. Of course, in Korea, there are the three major ones at the moment. Now, this decision follows recent changes to the law that regulates how mobile devices are sold. Now, when you switch carriers, the company you move to can give you up to 500,000 won to help cover various costs like cancellation fees, for example, and the loss of benefits for being with your previous carrier for a long time. Now, this change aims to make it easier for people to switch carriers and get a good deal. Now, the commission is also making it easier for carriers to change the amount of money they give as subsidies every day instead of twice a week. This gives carriers more freedom in how they promote and sell their services. Now, these changes will start right away. Now, to make sure everything goes smoothly with these new support funds, the commission will keep a close eye on how things are going in the market. They're setting up a team with people from the commission, mobile carriers, and other groups to do this. Despite concerns from some sectors that the new support funds might be unclear and could undermine budget phone operators, the commission has decided to proceed with the original plan, taking into account various factors. The commission expects these measures to significantly reduce the financial burden of purchasing new devices. That's why they're going ahead with it. But the budget phone industry is not happy, of course, with these changes concerned of an overheated market. We haven't really seen much action yet in terms of this. It's kind of like a each of these carriers are kind of looking at each other, waiting for who's going to make the first move. And when it does kick start, I think it's going to be a very fierce battle. But there's a lot. It may seem good on the surface, but there are some caveats to this. I mean, it could bring about, as you say, an overheated market. And these kind of local marketplaces, these individual mobile phone shops, which were a bit notorious for scamming a lot of customers as well. So it could open up a possibility of more scams related to this and exploitations of the system as well. So it may sound like good news and rosy, but of course, there are some strings that could come with it.
Thank you so much, Adam. We'll see you tomorrow. We appreciate it as always.
You're very welcome. See you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.